Hello, Dreamers, and welcome back to the show, finally. Before we get started, I have a few notes about this podcast. As you know, as I've been telling you for a long time now, this is an independent one-woman podcast, which means I depend on you, the listeners, to help keep the show going and help new people discover us. And there are a number of ways that you can help. You can leave a nice rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or whichever platforms you listen to your shows on. You can recommend us in true crime discussion groups and forums. You can follow the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, X, like follow, comment, and share. And if you'd like to go above and beyond, you can subscribe to California Dreaming's Patreon, where for starting at just $1 a month, you can gain access to dozens of exclusive premium episodes that you won't hear anywhere else. And if a subscription isn't your thing, but you would still like to contribute to the show, you can do so through PayPal using the email californiapod@gmail.com. I have people to thank. I'm going to get to it. I've just been very occupied with getting the Patreon episodes together and writing this one. And because this one turned out to be pretty long, I'm going to go ahead and break it into two parts. So I'll have a little bit more content for you. I don't want to leave out any details for the sake of time. So let's get started with today's episode. This is a case that caught our attention back on April 29th, 2022. And as I'm recording this, it happens to be close to the second anniversary of when all of this started. I remember not being really mad at this story when it was happening. I mean, sometimes you get worried, you get mad, you get angry, you hear these big cases that hit the media. But this one, I wasn't feeling that kind of way. I was following the story for the 11 days that it was going on. And when it was over, I was a little bit bummed that it didn't end better. But you all might recall this one as well, and I've been wanting to talk about this since it happened. It's always better for me to wait for the investigation to play out and then to come back at you with it, with all the details, you know. So this is the story of Vicky White and Casey White. And while they have the same last name, they are not related, which is why oftentimes they are referred to separately, Vicky White, Casey White. We don't call them Vicky and Casey White, although I did so in the title of the episode just for the sake of space. So, as stated, they're not married, they're not related, it's just purely a coincidence. This is a story that garnered national attention, and many of you, like me, may have followed it in real time as it was unfolding. This particular event took place over the course of 11 days, like I said. It involved a corrections officer, and that would be Vicky, who had been on the job for 17 years, along with an inmate named Casey, with whom Vicky had developed a romantic relationship with. At the time that this took place, Vicky was 56 years old and Casey was 38. And you know what, Dreamers? I would be lying to you if I didn't admit that if this couple had vanished together forever to go and live on an isolated and anonymous life on a deserted island, I wouldn't have been mad at that either. So what occurred on April 29th, 2022 was a thing that had been in the works for quite some time. When it came time to set this plan in motion, Vicky White did something that was quite unexpected. The day before, which would be April 28th, at the age of 56 and after 17 years on the job as a corrections officer at the Lauderdale County Detention Facility located in the town of Florence, Alabama, which is in the northern part of the state and about 30 minutes south of the Tennessee border, Vicky submitted her paperwork that outlined her intentions to retire from her position as assistant director of the detention center effective the following day. So her co-workers really had to quickly scramble to throw together a small retirement party for the next day, which was a Friday. Usually when someone retires, it's an event. It's a milestone in life that is many years in the making. Remember, Vicky is only 56 years old and she had been on the job for 17 years. So the decision to retire on the surface seems like it was an impulsive thing for her to want to do on her part. And in some ways, it kind of was, but it wasn't the decades-long awaited-for retirement that most people look forward to. Because those who knew and worked with Vicky said that this was the manner in which Vicky would have wanted to have left her job in order to move on to the next phase of her life. She wouldn't have wanted to make a big production out of it. She wouldn't have wanted all the pomp and circumstance. Vicky would have very much liked to have turned in all her things and quietly rode off into the sunset. But despite the last-minute notice, Vicky's co-workers were able to give her a proper little send-off right there at the detention center where they all worked at. What Vicky basically told her co-workers is that she was going to retire while she was still in her 50s in order to enjoy that stage of her life. She even entertained the possibility of coming back to a whole new career after taking some time off. Later that same day, however, Friday, April 29th, 2022, Vicky White went missing and her story hit the news. And by the weekend, the entire country was searching for her and would be for the next 11 days. You see, Vicky wasn't the only person from the Lauderdale County Detention Facility to go missing that day. A man named Casey White also inexplicably vanished. And like I said, despite the same last name, the two are not related. In fact, Casey White was an inmate at the county detention center. Vicky was one of the officers in charge of keeping watch at the jail. And while Casey and Vicky were not related, come to find out, they were having relations. At 9:40 a.m. that morning, Casey and Vicky were captured on surveillance video, leaving the detention center together to drive over to the court. By all appearances, it seemed like a routine transfer of an inmate. You can see Vicky walking out of the detention center and into a secured parking area. Her back is mostly turned to the camera, but the interesting thing is her back is also turned on Casey as well. And he's the inmate, and that's something that members of law enforcement never do, turn their backs on a prisoner. But she did so and seemed pretty casual about it as she held the door open for him and he came lumbering out in handcuffs and leg shackles. He was supposedly going to the courthouse for an appointment to undergo a mental health evaluation. Another thing about the manner in which Vicky and Casey left the detention center was the fact that Vicky was alone with this inmate, who was and is considered to be quite a dangerous man, considering the crimes that he was in prison for, which I will talk about. You see, Casey White is an exceptionally large man, standing at a towering 6'9" or 2.06 meters tall, and at the time he weighed nearly 300 pounds or 136 kilograms. So this is a man who could very easily overtake Vicky. She is the only officer around escorting him to the court. However, it wasn't until about 6 hours later, 3 or 3:30 that afternoon, that the staff of the jail began to realize it had been several hours since they had seen or heard from Vicky or Casey for that matter, which was very unusual for a routine appointment such as that. So the alarm was immediately raised that something was afoot at the Lauderdale detention facility. The call went out over the police radio communications that Vicky White was missing, and it was immediately clear to the officer taking the call that they were in a full-blown panic mode at the detention center. And then they got word that inmate Casey White was also missing and that he had left the facility with Vicky that day as she escorted him to the court. And the both of them, at that point, were missing, and that intensified the urgency to try and find Vicky, as there was a very real fear that her life was in grave danger. Just the mention of Casey's name caused Vicky's colleagues to fill with anxiety and panic. Casey White has a very long, violent history and criminal background. He's a man who those who have encountered him know that he has complete disregard for human life. The idea that Casey White was out there somewhere free and on the loose was a very scary prospect for officials in the Florence area and the surrounding communities. And of course, Vicky's friends and colleagues are beside themselves, afraid of what Casey would do to Vicky. Because here's the thing, your first thought is not going to be that your trusted friend and coworker aided and abetted this inmate's escape. They immediately thought that Casey had done something to gain control over Vicky and had either kidnapped her or killed her. Never in a million years did anyone think that Vicky and Casey had developed a relationship while he was at the jail. And I'll explain why he was at the county jail to begin with. You see, Casey was actually already convicted and sentenced to a 75-year prison sentence for a one-man crime wave that he was convicted and sentenced to in 2016. In an article on CNN.com, this apparently wasn't the first time that Casey White tried to escape from prison after earning the trust of corrections officers who worked in whatever facility that he was at. At the time, Casey was 38 years old. After the impromptu retirement send-off, Vicky told her coworkers that the only thing she needed to do that morning was to escort Casey to court. But within hours, investigators realized that Casey White actually did not have any evaluation or hearing scheduled for that particular day. After leaving the detention center, they quickly ditched the county-issued patrol vehicle and they left the state of Alabama in another. Before I get into the relationship between Vicky and Casey, I want to talk a little bit more about Casey himself, prior escape attempts, his criminal history, and his size. Casey's criminal record went back about 10 years at the time to 2012. In other reports, I've heard 20 years. According to court documents, Casey had apparently beaten his own brother about the head and face with either the handle of a sledgehammer or an axe, which sent Casey to prison for over 3 years. By 2015, Casey was out again, but in short order found himself in trouble again. And this is when he carried out the crime spree that I mentioned a moment ago. It was a spree that included a home invasion robbery, a carjacking, and a high-speed police chase. In fact, one of Casey's victims of the home invasion robbery and carjacking was interviewed on ABC, and I'll talk about what Casey's victim had to say about him a little bit later on in this episode. So for that crime spree, Casey was slapped with 15 charges in early 2016, including attempted murder, kidnapping, and robbery. He would go on to be convicted on 7 out of the 15 counts and was sentenced to a variety of sentences that in total added up to 75 years in prison. Not only that, Casey White said that if he ever got out of prison, that he wanted to kill an ex-girlfriend and that ex-girlfriend's sister, so that when police came for him, they would just kill him too. So when it was discovered that he had escaped, all of those people needed to be warned and protective measures needed to be taken. But anyway, Casey White was serving his time at the William E. Donaldson Correction Facility when he was transferred to the county jail about 4 years into that 75-year sentence, and that happened in 2020. And it was in 2020 that Casey had apparently come forward to confess to the 2015 stabbing death of 58-year-old Connie Ridgway in Rogersville, Alabama. She was found dead in her apartment after police were called by a neighbor wanting them to conduct a welfare check. Connie was found stabbed to death in her living room. Her case ended up going cold until, out of the blue, Casey White confessed to it sometime in 2020. He was charged with first-degree murder and burglary. Casey also claimed that he was paid to carry out the murder. At the time that he confessed, Casey was already, like I said, 4 years into a 75-year sentence. He was apparently interviewed at the prison, and I suppose when he was asked to speak to authorities about the Connie Ridgway case, it was during that interview that Casey was able to provide certain bits of information and details about the evidence and the crime scene that would not have been known by anyone else but certain members of law enforcement and the killer himself. The reasons why Casey decided to confess to the killing aren't really known for sure, but I remember being under the impression that Casey White may have done it on purpose to get himself transferred out of the maximum security prison and back to the more lax county jail. Maybe this was all a part of a big, elaborate escape plan, but nobody seemed to pick up on that. Maybe Casey realized from personal experience that he had an easier time winning the trust of the jailers at the county as opposed to the corrections officers at the prison. Either way, Casey White managed to get himself slapped with some brand new murder charges in 2020 and was brought back down to the county jail to face those charges. Just purely based on the size of Casey White, the CNN article stated, quote, "Following the news that Casey White had escaped from prison, Connie Ridgway's son, Austin Williams, told the U.S. Sun that he feared for his safety. He's a very dangerous person with a violent history, and anyone who comes in contact with them, meaning Casey and Vicky, needs to contact 911 right away. This is a 6'9", 250-pound man who broke into a woman's apartment and stabbed her to death. Anyone who crosses his path is in a huge amount of danger. There is no limit to what he might do." Connie's son also expressed his shock and disappointment that this man who randomly confessed to his mom's murder from years earlier was actually able to not only escape from jail, but did so with help from a person who was trusted with keeping him on the inside. He had been hoping to get some answers about what happened to his mom and why. So at the time of this prison break, when it happened, Casey White was in the county jail facing two counts of capital murder. He had entered a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity, and while he was attending hearings in the case, he was being housed at the Lauderdale Detention Facility. He arrived there to start dealing with some of the new murder charges on February 25th, 2022, so just a little more than 2 months before the escape. So this relationship, it blossomed pretty quickly, or perhaps it was already in place. It was during his stay at the county jail, whether it was this one or if it was in the past, and many believe it was from the past, that Casey met Vicky. And from there, they were pretty much in regular contact with one another until the day of the escape. Vicky at the time, like I said, was the assistant director of corrections at the Lauderdale County Jail. And not just this jail, but for the whole county. That's why she was able to walk out of the facility with Casey by herself, unchecked and unquestioned. And she was armed, which was a big no-no. They just happened to catch a glimpse of Vicky's service weapon in her holster as she was going through the door from the jail to the parking garage with Casey. She had her back turned towards him. He was handcuffed with his hands in front of him. He could have easily grabbed for her weapon at any time. But Vicky clearly had no fear of this guy whatsoever, and that's because she was in love with him. When the news broke, or the word got out that Casey White and Vicky White were missing, Vicky's friends and colleagues immediately assumed that the wayward inmate had done something to Vicky. Either she was kidnapped, or she was being held hostage, or he was harming her, or worse, that he may have actually already killed her. It was a huge deal for not only those who loved and cared about Vicky, but the community as a whole. Everybody was on edge. Because normally the town of Florence, Alabama, things are pretty uneventful. Jailbreaks aren't common as it is, but it really blindsided the locals and had the surrounding communities really worried. It's a town where everyone knows everyone. It's situated along the Tennessee River. The people there are blue-collar and hard-working, and like much of the South, they're close-knit and God-fearing. But the peace and tranquility of Florence had been turned upside down because of word that a dangerous inmate had escaped from the nearby county lockup. And this, in turn, put a tremendous amount of pressure on the local authorities to hurry up and get this man back into custody. About 30 minutes after the jail noticed Vicky and Casey had been gone for the better part of 6 hours, the first discovery they made related to the escape happened to be finding Vicky's patrol car. Officers driving around, I mean, everyone is on the lookout, right? Within 30 minutes, two officers saw Vicky's vehicle parked at a strip mall called Academy Shopping Center. So law enforcement descended on the shopping center to go from business to canvas for witnesses and or cameras in hopes of getting an idea of where the two went after they dumped the patrol car. But they quickly realized that there had to be another vehicle involved in this escape, at least one other car, but they had no idea what kind of car or where to even start. So finding this patrol car finally gave them a place to begin. But the sheriffs also understood that this problem that they had on their hands might be more than what they're going to be able to handle. So the U.S. Marshals were called in to help with the manhunt. They could see that they were going to need all the help that they could get in the search for this escapee. And this is what the United States Marshals do. That's their job. Martin Keeley, U.S. Marshal in Northern Alabama, headed up the boots-on-the-ground search for the missing couple. The U.S. Marshals met with the Lauderdale County Sheriff's officials, and they came to be under the impression that Vicky White's life was in serious danger and they needed to act fast. They were on the case within an hour and a half of finding Vicky's patrol car. They started their search by getting to know Casey White. He's the criminal, so he's the one that they think is behind all of this. They don't yet know just how deeply involved Vicky was, or that she had any involvement at all. So they're diving into Casey's background, his history, friends, and family. They figure that he's got to have some kind of help with this escape from the outside. Somebody out there is aiding and abetting, or harboring a fugitive. They just don't know it's actually Vicky who is his connection on the outside and on the inside for that matter. The U.S. Marshals started looking at anybody who lived in Florence or the surrounding areas that Casey may have been in contact with, anybody that he might know, family or friends that he might have nearby the jail that he may have somehow been in touch with. And while they didn't find anything of interest right away, they did quickly figure out just how dangerous and violent Casey White was and is. In a show about this case on ABC, it gave a slightly different telling of the crime spree that had landed Casey White in that 75-year prison sentence. They said that Casey's conviction dated back two decades, not just one like the CNN article had reported, while the manhunt was going on. So this might be a little bit more accurate now that some time has passed and they can check deeper into Casey's background. Everything was happening so fast in real time. We were following the story. So there was always a lot of misinformation that was getting out there. So Casey's convictions go back about 20 years, apparently. And the fact that he's escaped only 4 years into a 75-year sentence is very, very concerning, not only because you're dealing with a very dangerous individual, you're also dealing with an individual with very little to lose, so he thinks. I mean, when confronted with their own mortality, when it really comes down to it, most people start to feel like they have something to lose and their life suddenly has value again. The same thing went on in the Patreon series that I'm currently working on, which is a multi-part series on the murder of Seth Jackson in Florida. In all, this case had 6 defendants and 6 convictions. The defendant who was the one who actually did the murder, he kept telling everybody that he wanted to kill Seth, that he was going to go to prison for statutory rape, that he had nothing to lose, that he didn't care, whatever, whatever. But in the end, he completely flipped his story and tried to put the blame on everyone else while claiming he wasn't even present when the killing happened. So anytime I hear somebody say, "I've got nothing to lose," once some time passes and you have a chance to talk to your family and to your attorney, and you're not feeling so tough about life, you start to see that you do have some things to lose. If anyone in the story was in a place in life where they felt like they had nothing left to lose, it would have been Vicky. And you'll see that as the story plays out. So apparently, in his crime spree, Casey was convicted of attempted murder for shooting at his ex-girlfriend, two counts of kidnapping in the attack, which included the girlfriend and her roommate. He shot his girlfriend's dog. He stole their car. He left northern Alabama and drove into Tennessee. From there, he stole several more cars from people at gunpoint, landing him a few carjacking charges as well. Taking law enforcement officials in both Alabama and Tennessee on high-speed car chases that reached speeds of 120 miles or more, or 193 kilometers per hour. Casey ended up losing control of the vehicle as he was fleeing from police. He crashed off the side of the road, and this resulted in an armed standoff with police officers. In the dash cam that they had at the time, you could hear those officers telling Casey that he needs to calm down, that they, law enforcement, are going to back off a little bit. We're not going to shoot you. And you could hear Casey reply back, "Yeah, you are." But the officer speaking to him says back, "No, no, we just want to talk to you." Clearly the only person that Casey White cares about in this situation, the next situation, and every situation for the rest of his life will be Casey White. He does not give a rat's ass about the safety of the public or innocent bystanders. Casey White is that guy who just chooses violence when somebody makes him upset. So Vicky's life and her safe return was the priority, on top of keeping the rest of the community safe as well. So this isn't Casey White's first rodeo when it comes to putting together an escape plan. It also wasn't the first time he was able to gain the trust of a corrections officer, but the first time around, he was caught before he was able to put his plan into action. This all happened in 2020 while he was at the same Lauderdale County detention facility. He had a plan to escape from the jail by taking a hostage. Authorities caught wind of the plan and they showed up at his cell and shook it down. They found a shank, and that prompted Casey's return to the Department of Corrections, back to the maximum security facility. So the fact that Casey escaped this time wasn't a surprise. The surprise was that he had help from one of their own, Vicky White. It was Vicky White who they believe he started cozying up to back in 2020. This isn't something that just happened in February of 2022 when he was transferred back to the county jail. So while trying to understand what they're dealing with here in missing prisoner Casey White, law enforcement officials also wanted to try and know all they can about Vicky as well. It didn't take very long for them to see that Vicky was very much cared about by her friends and family and the whole community. Nobody had a bad thing to say about her. She had a fun-loving spirit and a wonderful sense of humor. And she was as devoted as she could be to her job. She was completely trusted and demonstrated nothing but integrity and pride in her work. Her service record at her job was spotless at the time that she blemished it up with this escape fiasco. Bottom line was, everybody loved Vicky. Vicky had been married to a man named Tommy. The pictures of Vicky and Tommy that I saw definitely looked like they were taken in the 1980s. But the marriage did not produce any children, and it didn't last, ending in divorce in 2006. But it was said that the two of them stayed friends even after the split and remained close until Tommy suddenly passed away just a few months before the escape. I looked up to see if I could find his obituary, and I'm pretty sure that I did. It seems to add up. A Tommy White passed away on January 24th, 2022 in Lexington, which is in northern Alabama, a little bit east of Florence. Tommy and Vicky were divorced, so she wasn't listed on his obituary, but he was not survived by any children. He was 62 years old at the time. So his age, the timing of his death, and his location, it has me believing that I have the right Tommy White here. So he died just a little more than 3 months prior to the escape. At the time of Tommy's death, Vicky was still very close to him, to his surviving siblings, and to his mom. According to those who knew Vicky, that's the kind of friend she was. Once Vicky cared about you, she cared about you for life. Even when her in-laws were no longer her in-laws, Vicky remained a presence. On the TV show that I watched about this on ABC, they interviewed a judge who worked with Vicky at the courthouse and had become friends with her over the years. So she thought. Whenever the judge had inmates in her courtroom for hearings or whatever, Vicky was often the officer who guarded them while they were in the court. Or at least one of the corrections officers who did. There's usually more than one. And the judge said that there was never any doubt that Vicky had nothing but the safety and security of her courtroom at the top of her priorities. Vicky was a protector, and the judge truly felt like Vicky would risk her own life to save anybody else's in that courtroom. That was part of her job, especially when it came to the judges. The judge recalled an incident that occurred in her courtroom back in February of 2017, when Vicky's dedication to her job as a corrections officer was truly put to the test. There was an inmate in Judge Medley's courtroom that somehow managed to get out of his leg irons and started to make his way towards an open window. They were on an upper floor, and his intentions were to take his own life by jumping out of that window. But before he could make his way to it, Vicky and another deputy got over to him, but in doing so, he managed to grab Vicky's service weapon and get it out of her holster. An alarm started blaring through the courthouse that specifically meant to indicate that an inmate was armed. When the other deputies made their way to Judge Medley's courtroom, they arrived to find Vicky, along with another female corrections officer, laying on top of this man, holding him down to the ground, making sure the judge and everybody else was safe. And Vicky stayed there until she was told in no uncertain terms that the judge was safe. Vicky White had been sworn to protect and serve, and that's exactly what she did, until she didn't. But all of these people at the onset of this still think that their friend was in grave danger being in the company of Casey White, and they were very, very afraid for her life. Her friends cried, and they lost sleep. They truly worried for Vicky. However, when investigators working this case decided to take a closer look at the moment Casey White made his escape, they saw some things that raised some red flags when it came to just how much or how little Vicky White may have had to do with everything. They kept looking at that footage of the two of them going from inside the jail to the parking garage area, and the more they looked at it, the more they started to see that something wasn't quite right with the way that Vicky and Casey just walked out of there. They watched the moment that Vicky held the door open for Casey. I told you earlier in that moment she had her back turned to him. She not only has her back turned, but she looks very unbothered and unconcerned about the 6'9" man following closely behind her. Vicky was very casual considering the person that she was escorting. That stood out to investigators immediately. And the fact that Vicky was by herself was a violation of jail policies. She also walked in front of the inmate the whole time, also a violation. Nobody is supposed to walk in front of an inmate. We've seen them walk alongside inmates and behind them, but never alone and never leading the way. The main thing that the media zeroed in on with this escape were the policies that were violated when Vicky left with Casey to supposedly escort him to the court for that non-existent mental health evaluation, starting with escorting him alone. But because of her position as Assistant Director of Corrections, Vicky was the one in charge of coordinating and preparing inmates for transport. There was nobody to question what she was doing because she was the one in charge. In fact, Vicky had the second highest seniority at the jail in the county. She had so much experience dealing with inmates that there was a moment where they even gave her the benefit of the doubt that she just overlooked a couple of really important points in their inmate transport protocol. But that was hard for those who worked closely with her to believe because she was never ever afraid or intimidated by any inmate, no matter their crime, no matter their size. When it came to the firearm, the service weapon that I mentioned earlier, I did say that Vicky was armed with it when she shouldn't have been, and I'll explain that in a moment. But it wasn't until they took a closer look at that surveillance footage that they saw the firearm in its holster on Vicky's utility belt. But she had a pretty heavy jacket on at the time, So it wasn't obvious right away that she was armed. Looking back on it, it would have been unusual for Vicky to be wearing a jacket like that because it was a warm day. It was almost May by then. But it wasn't until a very quick flash of the gun showed up on the surveillance camera, when her jacket kind of flew away for a moment, that's when they realized that it was more than just a couple of protocols that were broken. In facilities across the United States, you do not go into any jail or prison or detention center with a firearm. They will put their gun in a locker located someplace outside the area where inmates are processed. So now authorities are aware that not only is Vicky in the company of a very large suspected murderer, she had her service weapon with her too. And this brings about another level of danger for those who are in pursuit of the convict and the corrections officer, as well as the general public. They'll eventually find out that Vicky's service weapon isn't the only gun that the couple have in their possession. One of the first places investigators wanted to go looking for Vicky was at her mom and dad's house. They would make their way over there the morning of the second day of the escape. Personally, I think Vicky was too smart and too private for them to know very much in terms of what she was up to. I don't think she would put any of her family in harm's way like that or risk getting them in any trouble. But they wanted to check and make sure she wasn't there or hiding out, or if perhaps Casey had done something to them, like taking them hostage. So that first night, they sent officers to Vicky's parents' house, and they will be surprised yet again by what they find there. As they arrived at Vicky's parents' house looking for clues or evidence as to what she might have planned or where she might be going, investigators walked into one of the bedrooms and found Vicky White's purse. All of her stuff was in there. Her driver's license, her bank cards, her credit cards, her detention center ID card, everything that a person would take with them every time they left the house. She brought none of it with her. What was even more troubling was the fact that she had her last will and testament out in the open, as well as a life insurance policy, right there, so those items could be easily discovered should something happen to Vicky. So when authorities found those items, the fear for Vicky's life intensified, because now it was becoming clear that Vicky was seeming to not be worried about her life being in the hands of Casey White. She seemed to have no intentions of coming back home if this plan of theirs failed. She was going to run off into the sunset with Casey and live happily ever after somewhere. Coming back and facing the music was not an option. There had been a few small red flags here and there as they grappled with what they had on their hands here the day of the escape. But getting into day two, finding Vicky's purse, will, and life insurance, that was huge, especially for her parents, who she was living with at the time. And I'll explain why that was a little later as well. At this stage of the investigation, when it came to Vicky, all investigators knew for sure is that she lied about taking Casey to that mental health evaluation appointment, and that she left behind her last will and testament, her life insurance policies, and all of her important ID cards, bank cards. So authorities are left with having to face the very real possibility that Vicky, one of their own, was actually a willing participant in this jail escape. So the next day, day three of the escape, law enforcement go and talk to Vicky's parents again, and that's when they discovered that Vicky had rented a storage unit. And really the most important thing that they found out about finding that storage unit is that Vicky used an alias to rent it, along with the phone number that they were unaware of was attached to her, a burner phone. So yeah, that's pretty suspicious too. This is starting to look more and more planned out on Vicky's end than initially thought, more so than anyone could have imagined. As this investigation goes along and the search intensifies, the next thing the marshals did was request a background check to be ran on Vicky through the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. This background check took place on day two of the escape, and through that background check, it was discovered that Vicky had purchased two firearms from a gun store in Huntsville, Alabama, a shotgun and an AR-15. and these purchases happened within only a matter of weeks of the escape. So it raised the concern for the safety of law enforcement and the community to another level. It was also very telling of the planning that went into the whole escape job, and that Vicky is not a victim. She has not been kidnapped. She was an active and willing participant in this jail breakout. And before the day is over, the Lauderdale County Sheriff will announce to the media that Vicky was, in fact, a willing participant of the escape. But the only thing that they really needed to try and figure out is if she was somehow coerced or acting under duress or being forced to participate in some manner, as they are very well aware of how manipulative, violent, and intimidating Casey White can be. So it's a little bit of a turn from the onset of the escape when Vicky's colleagues, co-workers, and supervisors openly stated that there was no way Vicky was a willing participant. Within 48 hours, that opinion was changing. And with that announcement that the sheriff made, questioning whether or not Vicky was acting on her own or if she was being coerced, it had to get you thinking, is it really plausible that Casey would be able to have that much control over Vicky to actually have her doing this by force? Probably not. When you look at the dynamics of their relationship, Vicky was the one who actually held the majority of the power, not Casey White. And it was starting to look more and more like Vicky was very, very much along for the ride. But still, there were friends and family and loved ones who clung to a sliver of hope that Vicky was being manipulated and intimidated by Casey, because that's what his track record and criminal history speaks to. He's the kind of guy who is just used to doing what he wants to do, when he wants to do it, whichever way he pleases, and nobody really is able to stand in his way. The man is violent and really needs to be kept under lock, key, and watchful eye at all times, being the imposing figure that he is. And he is the kind of person who will not hesitate to use any means necessary to get whatever it is that he wants at any given moment, even if that means to cause you harm or even worse. The guy really has no fear. Well, with the exception of when it's his life that's on the line. Like when he crashed during that crime spree and high-speed chase that turned into an armed standoff. I heard the officers on the dash cam audio telling him that they weren't going to shoot, they weren't going to hurt him, but Casey White said, "Yeah, you are." That's when the big guy gets scared, when other people are pointing guns at him instead of the other way around. ABC interviewed one of Casey White's victims, a gentleman by the name of Chase Davis. He was in the crosshairs of Casey's 2015 crime spree that landed him that 75-year prison sentence. On a 911 call that had come in from Chase, he was asking for police right away, that someone had just stole his car. Some guy had come up to him holding two guns while Chase was at home with his mom and his brand new baby boy. So Chase did what he could to comply and stay calm. He followed Casey's instructions and gave in to his demands in order to keep himself and his family safe. So he turned the keys to his vehicle over to Casey, who had ordered Chase into his house at gunpoint. Casey then ordered him to not make any phone calls or do anything for 10 minutes, or else he was going to drive his truck into his house. It was after that that Casey was involved in that car chase that ended up in that standoff. And after Casey was arrested, he was interrogated, and it was then he fully admitted to everything that he had done to Chase and his family, that he had robbed him at gunpoint and stole his car. He admitted that he held a gun to him and told him that he doesn't want to hurt him, he just wants the keys, and he took the keys, took the car, and then wrecked it. Not only that, Casey said if he had the chance, if he hadn't crashed or hadn't been caught, he intended to go and kill that ex-girlfriend of his. He had actually driven back to her house, but there was a deputy still there. The interrogator asked, "You thought about going back there and trying to kill her?" And Casey answered, "Oh yeah, if she had been there, I would have killed her." When Casey White was charged in the crime spree, he went to trial. and Chase Davis and his mom were able to show up in court and provide testimony against him. And it really wasn't until the two of them got into the courtroom and learned all they did about Casey White, the charges that he was currently on trial for, and his criminal past, that it really fully sunk in just how dangerous and how close to death that they came in their encounter with this man. And Casey White continued to terrorize his victims by threatening Chase and his mom because of their willingness to testify. So you can imagine the fear that these people had when the word got out that Casey had escaped from the county jail. The notion that Vicky may have been coerced into helping Casey was further quashed when investigators delved into Vicky's finances and financial situation. What was revealed was that there was even more planning than what investigators had initially thought, as there were a number of moves that she had made in the weeks and months leading up to the escape that were very surprising. Vicky had recently cashed out her 401k from work. She also sold her home by putting it up for auction with explicit instructions for the home to be sold as soon as possible. She ended up selling it for about $45,000, which is a big chunk of money for these two people to be on the run with, that can sustain them for quite some time and can take them quite some distance. That information was from the court documents, but in the media, after the fugitives were apprehended, a different amount was reported that the house was sold for, which I will tell you about that amount towards the end of this when I run down the timeline one more time. All of these clues, all of this evidence pointed to this being something Vicky White was a willing participant in taking part of. Regardless of whether she was along for the ride, on her own free will or not, that wasn't going to have any impact on the urgency that all of these law enforcement agencies had to find her and the fugitive. Also on the second day, later in the afternoon, investigators got what they believed to be their first glimpse of the vehicle that they believed the fugitives obtained after they ditched Vicky's patrol car in that shopping center parking lot. They had gone back to look at video surveillance of the parking lot, and they could very clearly see Vicky's vehicle pull up next to a small SUV that was parked kind of off by itself in the shopping center. Vicky pulled up to the left of it. It turned out to be an orange 2007 Ford Edge. And it's not the most inconspicuous colored car in the world ever. I'm not a big fan of the color orange, but I do like some of these darker orange shades that these cars come in these days. Not like a bright safety cone orange, but kind of like a little toned down, a little bit like burnt orange. It still kind of stands out, which is somewhat of an advantage for law enforcement who are on the hunt for the couple. So the investigators went back in time a couple more days in the surveillance footage of that parking lot, and they were able to see that 3 days before the escape, they saw that orange Ford Edge pulling up into that parking lot. Another thing that authorities have on their side is the fact that Casey White is such a distinct and recognizable looking man. He's huge. I've already talked about this. I don't see lots of 6'9" people walking around, but when I do, I have to say I take notice. I'm not the shortest person in the world, standing about 5'5"-ish or so. I don't even know, but 6'9" is pretty tall. The investigator talking to the ABC correspondent did say that they did bring it up in their meetings about the search for Casey and Vicky, that they were like, thank goodness he's got this huge disadvantage if he's trying to disappear into a crowd because he's going to stick out. And I remember hearing some of the news anchors and whatnot say that maybe he'll be able to blend in if Vicky sticks him in a wheelchair and rolls him around in places. And I even remember there being talk of slapping a wig and a dress on him and having him parade around as a woman, but man, he would be one large, fugly woman. Investigators didn't think that the pair would get very far for very long with this very large man trying to hide out, but then they figured that perhaps he would try as much as possible to stay inside the car most of the time for that exact reason, so they stayed pretty focused on looking for Vicky. Vicky's mom also spoke to the ABC reporters about her daughter during the time that she was on the lam with Casey, but she didn't want her face or her name to be broadcasted on TV. However, she spoke about how afraid she was that Casey was going to harm her daughter, So she got on TV to beg her to go to the nearest police station and to turn herself in before she gets hurt or worse. Her mom said, "All she needs to do is just turn herself in. Please come home." By this time, it was the third day of the escape. Vicky and Casey's images are being splashed across the news broadcasts, internet, and news alerts. So the whole country knows who everyone is looking for. And Vicky, she too has a pretty distinctive look herself. She's got really blonde hair, a pretty face, a bright smile. It's really distinct. The news media released several images of Vicky. A couple of them were altered with different hair colors and styles in case she tried to alter her appearance. As for Casey's images, this dude has so many different mugshots. They have him looking every which way he could possibly look. Older, younger, thinner, heavier, beard, no beard, long hair, short hair, bald-headed. This guy has so many different styles. All of them could be found just flipping through his extensive criminal history. Meanwhile, you know that investigators are also taking a look at what was going on behind the bars and walls of the Lauderdale County Detention Facility when it came to the apparent relationship that sparked between Vicky and Casey. And what this ended up leading to on day 4 of the escape is for the county sheriff to issue a warrant for Vicky White's arrest too, finally. And that warrant would be for charges including permitting or facilitating an escape in the first degree. The sheriff, his name was Rick Singleton, he considered Vicky a close friend and a trusted deputy. He had worked with her, trained her, guided her, and mentored her for her entire 17-year career. So it was very difficult for him to get up at the podium at a media press conference and announce that he has had to obtain a warrant to have her brought into custody, just like the other criminals that they used to work together to take care of and supervise. He even said, "Those of us who worked with Vicky White, this is not the Vicky White that we know by any stretch of the imagination. The employees are devastated and they're concerned for her safety. Casey White, as you've heard me say over and over again, is an extremely dangerous person." And as each of the days that these two are on the run passes, the media attention on the case was growing exponentially more intense, and the tips were coming in by the hundreds. But by the fourth day, investigators still had no idea where the two fugitives were. Of course, tips are not only coming in from all over the United States, but from all over the world. But for the most part, the tips are concentrated in northern Alabama, Tennessee, and the surrounding areas. And every tip has to be chased down in order to determine whether or not it was legitimate. Many of the tips turned out to be false, which is common in many of these high-profile, heavily covered cases. As each day passed, the anxiety grew for those working to hunt Casey and Vicky White down. And in the early part of the investigation, authorities really had a hard time catching up since the couple had gotten at least a 6 or 7 hour head start. Even more so before the federal marshals were contacted to take the lead on the manhunt. Another aspect of the case that investigators wanted to try to get a better idea of was what the relationship was like between Vicky and Casey in the weeks leading up to the escape. There are many, many security cameras located inside the Lauderdale County Detention Facility, so investigators started going back and looking at as much of the surveillance video as they could to see how much of Vicky and Casey's interactions were actually captured on video. Some of the older footage included video of Vicky passing commissary purchases to Casey through his cell door. When they zoomed in on the video, they were able to see that a hand had come out of the cell holding a yellow piece of paper. You can see Vicky grab the piece of paper and shove it into her pants pocket. Authorities also started to interview a number of inmates who had some kind of interaction with Casey in the jail on a regular basis. Some had casual interactions with him on the regular. Others had been cellmates with Casey for a period of time. And that's when they learned just how close Casey and Vicky had become. So come to find, they weren't hiding it all that much. It's just nobody except other inmates were paying attention enough to see. Several of them knew about them and that they were carrying on an inappropriate relationship. What they want to do is pinpoint how and when it all started between them. According to Casey's criminal record, He had several stays at the Lauderdale County Jail starting in 2020. But as I mentioned earlier, Casey had already been to court and convicted on that crime spree and given a pretty stiff sentence. I have his criminal history pulled up and I'll tell you what it says. His picture is listed too. They don't do that on the California inmate search website. So in the Alabama one, we get to see how ugly this guy is. Casey Cole White. He right now is being currently housed at that William E. Donaldson Correction Facility in Bessemer, Alabama, which on maps looks just about in the middle of nowhere. He's white, male, brown hair, gray eyes, 6'9", 270 pounds, born in 1983. As for scars, tattoos, and marks, he has some racist tattoos, including one on his back with the rebel flag or the Confederate flag with the words Southern Pride. And he has Vicky's name on him too. He has an admission date into the Alabama Department of Corrections as April 16th, 2019. And his release date is listed as December 31st, 9999. So 8,000 years from now, give or take. Back on April 16th, 2019, he was convicted on the charges stemming from the 2015 crime spree. Attempted murder, he got 25 years. Burglary in the first degree, 20 years to run concurrent. Kidnapping in the first degree, 25 years to run consecutive. Kidnapping in the first degree, 25 years also consecutive. Robbery in the first degree, 20 years concurrent. Burglary in the third degree, 15 years concurrent. Unlawful breaking and entering of a vehicle, 10 years concurrent. All total, that's where the 75 years comes from. So he has no chance at parole. And this escape from the Lauderdale County Detention Facility will solidify that. This man will never be free again. As I stated, at the time of the jail escape, Casey White was supposed to have been serving out his sentence at a maximum security facility. He was only 4 years in when he randomly confessed to that murder of Connie Ridgway. And that is the thing that got Casey transferred back to the county jail, so he could be near the courthouse to attend hearings about the case. He had previously been in the county jail where it was discovered that he had cozied up to another corrections officer, but I think it was Vicky, though it wasn't explicitly said that it was, and that he was planning an escape and he was subsequently caught with the shank. That's what got him sent back to prison. So it sounds like Casey decided that the only way he was ever going to get back to the county lockup instead of prison was if he caught another case, which is why I believe he confessed to that murder. Whether or not he did the murder, I don't know. I looked online and I didn't see anything about Connie's case. It was cold when he confessed to it, and that's not a good look for authorities. So if they don't have the evidence or the investigation was flawed, they might just want the Connie Ridgway case and Casey White to just go away forever and never speak of it. It really doesn't seem like Connie's murder has been prioritized at all, which has to be pretty difficult for the family. So what I'm going to do now, Dreamers, is I'm going to go ahead and pause this right here because I marked this as about the halfway point to what I have written. When we come back next time in part two, we are going to talk a little bit more about the murder of Connie Ridgway. We're going to talk about Casey's reputation in the Lauderdale County Jail. We're going to discuss how Vicky got away with carrying on this romantic relationship inside the jail. We're going to talk about who was the driving force behind all of this. We're going to take a look at some of the early and biggest mistakes that Vicky made in her planning of this escape. We're going to talk about how all of this came to an end 11 days later. We're going to talk about the post-capture interviews that were conducted. We're going to go over a little bit of the timeline of Vicky and Casey's relationship. And after that, I think I'll wrap up the whole story. So, Dreamers, that is all I have for today. I want to thank you all so much for being patient and waiting for me to get this episode out. If you noticed, I did put two episodes on Patreon for the month of April for all supporters. We're talking about the murder of Seth Jackson out of the state of Florida. If you're interested in that case, it'll only cost you $1 a month to join. You don't have to give a dollar. You can give a little bit more if you want to, but $1 is the minimum to get to listen. And it always will be. It always has been and always will be. Other shows charge $5, $10. Over here, you get full episodes, bonuses on Patreon starting at $1. So it's a pretty good deal, especially in these tough times. I want to thank you all so much for listening to this episode. I do have the entire episode written, so it's only a matter of me being able to sit down for a couple of hours again to record the second hour of this. So stay tuned for part two. I'll try my best to not take 3 weeks to do it. It shouldn't take that long. But I do want to get started back on Patreon because that case is just blowing my mind. However, this is one of my favorite stories during the pandemic. So I really wanted to tell you this one. I'm really happy and grateful to have the chance to do it. And I'm grateful to all of you for listening. I want to thank you again so much for your love and your support. And as always, until next time, sweet dreams.